Welcome to Keith and the Girl. I'm Keith Malley. Welcome to Keith and the Girl. I'm Keith Malley. Season 2 begins March 18th. Season 2 of Keith and the Girl. Meanwhile, how do we get to this point? Whether you're brand new to the show or you've been listening to two decades, over the next 6 podcasts, we're going to learn just that. How did we get here? How did I get from my birth to starting Keith and the Girl in March of 2005? I present to you the audiobook, The Great American Novel. And I think it might be funny, too. Like, I'm almost 50 now, and we're going to look back at a book I wrote 20 years ago that covers the first 30 years of my life. Like, what's going to be weird to rehear? Probably the dedication to an ex. Probably the relationship between my dad and I. Probably the way the book ends with a message to John Petrie, who ended up dead from an overdose, rotten piss. Anyway, let's begin. Meanwhile, keep in mind, The Great American Novel, the first book I wrote, is available along with the new book, The Dad Emails, at keithandthegirl.com/dadbook. Both are right there on Amazon. I want you to have them. If you dig it, please rate and review. That is important. You'll see both books at keithandthegirl.com/dadbook. All right. Hope you dig it. Here we go. Where's my snare? I have no snare in my headphone. There you go. Yeah. Yo. Yo. The Great American Novel. Ding 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 ding. The Great American Novel. By this guy, me, Keith Malley, I did that. All rights reserved, etc., etc. Don't be a douche. Preamble. Letter to the editors. Fucking editors. Did some pencil pusher fuck with Hemingway's work? Doubt it much. I had some people look at my book for final editing. My book starts with emails, and one person told me that the word emails, first of all, isn't hyphenated anymore. It's one word. Well, how can anyone keep up? Can we pretend I wrote this a long time ago? Maybe I'm writing old school. That's my technique. Or maybe I'm writing for when everyone changes their minds and butter is healthy again and email takes a hyphen. Or maybe that editor can go and fuck himself. Oh, and when I wrote emails, apparently no one uses single quotes unless they're inside regular quotes. Well, I needed to add attention to the word and separate it a little from the rest of the sentence. It surely doesn't mean my word deserves quotation marks. And don't get me started on if the comma goes in the quote or after the quote. That whole thing was always ridiculous. Idiots. Ready for this one? Don't use bold. There's no reason. They say all you ever need is capitalization and an exclamation point. Italicizing a whole sentence when someone is yelling? They say that's never necessary as well. Editor's note. They say. Be clearer. Who's they? Note back to editor. You bitch. There's never a need for bold. Then why is it a button on my computer? The entire company of Microsoft got together and thought there was a need. Of course there's a need. If one person is yelling at someone and that person yells back louder, do I add 2 exclamation points? Oh, that one start to look silly with 3 exclamation points. And have you ever met my dad? He yelled at me in capitalization, italics, and bold. I was there. Do you know that even proper nouns like stories and bands don't get italicized? They get capitalized, and that's all. Songs aren't italicized either. They are put in quotations. And who's talking right now? You need to be clear when you start having someone talk. First off, excuse me if I think store names and great bands should be italicized. I think they've earned it. Aerosmith doesn't need to be italicized. Excuse me? Oh, one more thing. When people review this book, I hope they italicize it in the review as well. Lord knows I've earned it. Like other proper nouns, Pledge of Allegiance, Keith, should not be italicized. You're right. It should be fucking glittered. The thing is, I don't have that key, commie. Also, the word life isn't capitalized. Mine is, honey. Ages are to be written out, as in 82-year-old lady. WTF. I don't have the time for that, and neither do my readers. I have a lot of material to get to. I don't need big margins and triple spacing either. I'm not writing a college paper. I actually have shit to say. Every time I say an age, I have to write it out. For who? Someone just waiting to die? Numbers are faster to read than words. In fact, if I could have written this whole book in numbers, I would have. Speaking of words, Shakespeare invented his own words. That's okay. Oh, but God forbid I put numbers in my book or use the publicly accepted all right as one word in a sentence. And speaking of God, did you know that heaven and hell are not to be capitalized? Interesting, editor. Would you mind telling God that? Or I guess it'd be lowercase g God if you had your way, right, heathen? Hey, you think that you and your crack staff could find it in your hearts to forgive me for loving Jesus? I mean, he only fucking died for me. Oh, and complaining about my tense changes? Please, because I could sweep a reader into the past, now making it the present like an Academy Award-winning movie, I get red marks all over my work? Offensive. And that's a full sentence, by the way. The you are is implied. Look, I appreciate that you took the time. It was my idea to have people look at my work. I don't know if you and your coworkers were playing some kind of game on who can find the most mistakes or what, but I do appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day of, I don't know, I can only assume nitpicking your loved ones to death. You must be fun in restaurants. Oh, actually, the proper way to rate out donut is D-O-U-G-H-N-U-T. And I already talked to you about using single quotations. Did you really just start a sentence with and? You know what? Who gives a fuck anymore? Sincere thanks, nonetheless, to those that took the time to look for my mistakes. My Keith and the Girl co-host Hemda, my brother Mark, my pals Melissa Loader, Lauren Hennessy, Kyle Thompson, and Michael Garrett. The big winner, though, Ms. Brittany Inman. Jesus Christ, this chick. You just went on a pencil rampage, didn't you, sweetheart? Wow, it wasn't a game, baby. Guess what? When you made mistakes guessing how something should be fixed, I circled it in red, then I drew a sad face. I'll hand it over for your perusal sometime soon. When talking about ignorant customers, while I worked as a waiter, for example, I wrote the line, "I'll have the exact same thing, but make mine a meatloaf." You told me not to capitalize the word meatloaf. Well, maybe I didn't mean the meat mixture, but rather the hefty singer that recorded such hits as the Bat Out of Hell albums. Maybe part of the joke is his turn as an actor in such films as Fight Club and Spice World. Oh, it doesn't seem funny now, sure, but jokes never are when they need explained. Well, in that case, the word meatloaf would be separated. His name is Meatloaf. Wow, you never fucking quit, do you? Anyway, the point is, thank you. Thank you for trying to ruin my book and teaching me to always be on my toes. Better luck next time. On a different note, I'd also like to thank my girlfriend, Catherine Lavery. Putting this book out without going through the regular venue so the man doesn't reap our sweet rewards was a laboring process, and not only did she format and edit this book, but she also kept having intercourse with my penis, which kept me happy and focused. I'd also like to thank Catherine's father, who inserted his own penis into his wife's warm, moist vagina, as well as the woman herself, whom received it, to make their beautiful daughter, whom I'm most grateful to know. I respect the both of you, dear sir and lady, and again, I thank you. Also thanks to Michael Khalili, Scott Sigler, A.B. Kovacs, and most of all, my own family. Sure, why not? Welcome. The History of the Art. I think I'm pretty good at knowing what to keep of the things I've written. You see, I throw out 75% of everything I put down on paper. Not everything makes it through our eagle-eyed testing process. However, that doesn't mean 25% of what I wrote made it to this book. I set aside 17% for my main projects, website ideas, a screenplay, a novel, song, stand-up, the radio show, and I send 3% of my works overseas to this poor, starving Guatemalan refugee I sponsor. Along with some material, I sent my sponsored child a plant and a fly swatter. Oh, the plant lit up the entire town. The fly swatter made him the envy of the entire village. His new dream is to teach his neighbors the usefulness of plastic on a stick. How funny would that be? Like villagers just keep whacking each other in the face with fly swatters. I send 1.5% of the final 5% to the church, and I give 3.5% to various charities. All figures plus or minus 0.5%. Writing began early for me. In seventh grade, our teacher would have to force the class to write a full page or two about any topic we wanted. And when the time ended, I'd be on page 14, upset my thought process was being disturbed. At home, I wrote all the time. My favorite things to write were choose-your-own-adventure type books, the only books I ever read, where you went to a different page in the book depending on what choice you, the protagonist of the story, decided to take. I created this brilliant Star Wars book where the cover featured my artwork. I was a terrible artist, but I loved drawing. When I got older and we were given real classes in school, I kept writing. I wrote an incredible horror story called Relentless. It was filled with all the bad horror puns and gruesome images. A pregnant girl was given a speech in class, and the slasher, another student, hacked her in the stomach. An infant's hand comes out of the gore. I then wrote Robopope, half man, half machine, all Pope. His Bible was kept in a metallic opening on his outer thigh, similar to where his predecessor holstered his gun. I wrote down many fabulous ideas, but it was one piece of work in particular that ended it all. In science class, I wrote a spectacular miniseries called Science, which, if I recall correctly, was about me and a friend taking over the school, not in a violent way, but in a Fonz-type way. Every day in science, a new page and a new story were created. It wasn't until Science L, Science Part 50, when my mom, who frequently searched our belongings, came across these pages of pure vulgarity. They were destroyed. After she and my father, an ex-Catholic priest, put the fear of God in me, I destroyed my other works, knowing if they were ever found, and they would be found, I wouldn't have to even worry about how I'd graduate from high school. It wasn't until 1996, many years later, when I took the time to write what I always wanted, my life story. It didn't matter that I was only 22 years old. For the next several years, I've written about my life. I wrote more to the novel and some shorter stories on the side. Many new pages were written. Many, many old pages were thrown away. Until 2006, when I compiled the old with the new and completed The Great American Novel, the autobiography of Keith Malley, the first 30 years, from my birth to my rebirth. Chapter 1. Who pissed in the gene pool? My dear son, earlier this evening I was looking something up on the internet. Apparently your homepage was located in a bookmark. I hit some buttons quite by accident, and much to my surprise, there was your homepage. When I saw your choices, I was curious to see why you would have a button so labeled. Seeing what I saw was far more than I ever wanted to see on one of my son's homepages, or anywhere else for that matter. If you were simply a good friend of mine, I would ask you if you just lost all your wisdom and descended to the wisdom level of a sand flea. However, since you are my son, a relationship which will last for all eternity, I would like to ask you some serious questions. If you ever become famous, how would you explain your homepage to a group of respectable people who had high moral standards? If you marry in the future, would you be proud to have your wife learn you had such a homepage? Would she be proud to tell her friends that you had such a homepage? Would she be proud to be married to you when one of her friends, her bosses, stumbled upon your homepage? How about the same series of questions if it dealt with one of your future children? Do you think that Clinton's daughter takes pride in the reasons why her father was impeached? He could try to give all the legalistic reasons to the nation that he wants to, but his daughter is never going to get over the humiliation she has to endure for the rest of her life because of her father's actions. Surely you're a wiser person than one who stoops to putting pornographic pictures, words, or symbols in your homepage or disseminate them in any form whatsoever. And to top it off, you have the audacity to tell your brother, sister, and mother to view it. Please, Keith, use the gifts that God has enriched you for noble purposes, not immoral ones. Your loving father, Dad. Reply. My dear son, earlier this evening, I was looking something up on the internet. Apparently, your homepage was located in a bookmark. I hit some buttons quite by accident. Much to my surprise, there was your homepage. When I saw your choices, I was curious to see why you would have a button so labeled. Okay, first of all, Dad, let me say how proud I am of my website. I think it's hilarious, and I'm quite proud of all the work I put into it. Let's say you did hit some buttons by accident, and you ended up on my site. So now you're at my site, and you see at the top of the main page an adult sticker. Would you then think maybe the site isn't for you? Seeing what I saw was far more than I ever wanted to see on one of my son's homepages, or anywhere else for that matter. Then why would you click a button marked lesbians? Did you think maybe you would find information on wagon carriages? If you were simply a good friend of mine, I would ask you if you have lost all your wisdom and descended to the wisdom level of a sand flea. However, since you are my son, a relationship which will last for all eternity, I would like to ask you some serious questions. If you ever become famous, how would you explain your homepage to a group of respectable people who had high moral standards? You are a priest. Do you think maybe your moral standards are higher than most? If you marry in the future, would you be proud to have your wife learn that you had such a homepage? Would she be proud to tell her friends that you had such a homepage? Would she be proud to be married to you when one of her friends, her bosses, stumbled upon your homepage? How about the same series of questions if it dealt with one of your future children? Yes to all of the above. I'm not ashamed my site is an adult site. You know if you like off-color humor or not. And if you don't visit my site. Do you think that Clinton's daughter takes pride in the reasons why her father was impeached? He could try to give all the legalistic reasons to the nation that he wants to, but his daughter is never going to get over the humiliation that she has to endure for the rest of her life because of her father's actions. I think being the president and sleeping around with a secretary is a little different than having three pornographic pictures and some dirty words on a website. Surely you are a wiser person than one who stoops to putting pornographic pictures, words, or symbols in your homepage or disseminate them in any form whatsoever. And to top it off, you have the audacity to tell your brother, sister, and mother to view it. Of course I didn't tell Mom to view my site. I warned her about it ahead of time, and you know better than that. Please, Keith, use the gifts that God has enriched you with for noble purposes, not immoral ones. I'm keeping the site, but thanks for your concern. Your loving father, Dad. Sent. It's nice of you to think that my moral standards are higher than most. However, I am not all that certain that such is a fact. But be that as it may, an adult theme these days has nothing to do with adult thinking, but everything to do with immoral or degrading actions. Such thinking and actions are merely disguised with the euphemism adult literature. There is nothing adult about it. It is as if a child got hold of a pack of matches and started to strike them one at a time, with the cover open, just to see what it was all about. Well, guess what? The odds are excellent the child is going to get severely burned and or burn down the house in which he is playing with the matches. As humans, we cannot escape the results of our actions indefinitely. Sooner or later, often sooner rather than later, all our actions catch up with us in one form or another. Our good actions bring us unexpected rewards. Our not noble actions will bring us nothing but misery in one form or another. Tell me, my son, do you think that your Savior, Christ Jesus, is proud of your web page? Okay, as humans, we cannot escape the results of our actions indefinitely, right? As humans, no. But once in beast form, reply. I have no clue what your child with matches analogy is all about. And maybe my website will bring me nothing but pure misery. But this I know. Not only is Christ Jesus, of whom all good things come, proud of my web pages, he logs on a good 3-4 times a day. He sent me email thanking me for making him laugh. Not many things make the man laugh anymore. Sent. I have found over the years that anytime a child, young or old, does not want to share the knowledge of what they have done or are doing with their parents, inevitably, what they are doing or have done was not the best thing that they were capable of doing morally. I hope that your sense of morally appropriate behavior is not any near as askew as you like to give me the impression that it is. I never understood why you try to turn everything into some type of joke. When everything is a joke, nothing is a joke. Just like when one says everything is serious, then nothing is serious. For in either case, everything takes on the same degree of importance. Such a life will hardly bring solace in time of serious hardship, and no life escapes serious hardship all of the time. Surprised daily by a spiritual repulsive son Keith's apparent love for Satan, Dad turns to his oldest son Mike. Surely he too hasn't gone evil. Sent. Hi, Mike. Are you aware of what Keith's webpage is like? I sincerely hope that you can truthfully tell me that you never have any intention of ever making a webpage with pornographic pictures on it, nor have it contain wording that would promote the degradation of the viewer's moral fiber rather than be uplifting to the betterment of the viewer. I would like to think that not all my children have gone off the deep end on this subject matter. Dad. And Mike writes, well, I think you're giving it too much credit. Surely you aren't telling me that you feel less well off spiritually simply because you have had occasion to visit his site, are you? Sent. All that we encounter in life has one of the following three effects upon us as humans. One, we are in some way inspired to be better than we currently are. Two, we are put in a position whereby we think either less of ourselves and or of others with whom we come into contact. Or three, the event is so blasé that it has no effect on either us nor an ant who had stumbled upon it. I cannot readily think of any occurrence that falls into the third category. We humans, as a people, engage in a constant struggle between taking the high road or the low road in life. None of us live unto ourselves. Even the hermit plays his part. We are all members of the mystical body of Christ. What any one member does has an effect upon all the rest of the members. When you have a headache or a cold or a sore foot, you are in pain. You cannot separate your overall being from that pain by simply saying, I'm fine, it's just my foot that hurts, or my throat that hurts, or my head that hurts. This principle is one of the basic tenets of the Christian religion. In St. Paul's letter to the Romans, chapter 12, verses 4 through 17, it is written, For as in one body we all have many members, nevertheless all the members do not have the same function. So we, though many, are one body in Christ and individually members one of another. Having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them. If prophecy in proportion to our faith, if service in our serving, he who teaches in teaching, he who exhorts in exhortation, he who contributes in liberality, he who gives aid with zeal, he who does acts of mercy with cheerfulness. Let love be genuine. Hate what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another in showing honor. Never tire in zeal. Be aglow with the Spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in your hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the people of Christ. Practice hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Rejoice with those who rejoice, weep with those who weep, live in harmony with one another, do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly, never be conceited. Repay no one evil for evil, but take thought for what is noble in the sight of all. There is much more on this subject matter in other works, but I think you get the message that I am trying to convey. Whether you choose to accept it or not is not up to me. By the way, any word yet on the results of your interviews? I truly wish you the best in all things. All my love, Dad. Well, as we've learned, a reply isn't even needed for another letter to be sent. Sent. Hi, Mike. Congratulations on your great job offer. I was thrilled to hear about it. It is amazing what we were talking about just a very short time ago regarding whether or not one person's single word, action, or experience can have a profound effect upon another. Seeing Keith's webpage brought frustration and sorrow to a father's heart. That frustration and sorrow continues even now. Hearing your great news on your job offer brings great joy to me. I am certain it shall continue for a long time. Yes, a person could experience frustration and sadness about one event while simultaneously experiencing joy about another. Congratulations again, Dad. My dad's big thing, like I'm sure a lot of dads is I brought you into this world. That's why you should respect me, that and that alone. When you think about it, though, all that really happened was you were a quitter. You had sex, you held out as long as you could, eventually you felt you couldn't last any longer, and you gave up, throwing your sperm all over the egg, and now I'm here. You couldn't keep fucking, so you had me. Basically, because you quit, I'm here. I brought you into this world. Great. Now I got a chance to end up in hell. Thanks. Oh, I was a dick. I admit it. I said that. I also enjoyed, well, how bad is hell? I mean, when you think about it, don't you get used to the fire eventually? No, you can't tell me you don't get used to being on fire eventually. Like after 17 trillion years, you don't think the flames are such a bother anymore. They're just annoying. My dad knew better, though. He was a Catholic priest. I was born on Monday, April 15th, 1974 in Somerset, Pennsylvania, USA. Somerset, Pennsylvania is nothing short of a little house on the prairie town. Dad always tried to convince us Somerset was once a booming town. Incredibly famous movie superstars spent many a time at the corner restaurant eating establishment. I seem to have just missed Somerset when it was a booming empire. Almost everyone has heard of Pittsburgh, PA. That was the promised land for us, the land of opportunity. It was our New York City. Roads going on top of roads, bridges, skyscrapers, elaborate complexes. How did they become so advanced? We didn't know. We just drove by in awe. Needless to say, Somerset is extremely conservative. If there's a crime, it's followed by a town curfew. Everyone knows everyone's business, and there are about three cops for every civilian. That's where I was born. Now let's talk about how I was raised. First, we'll continue with my dad, who used to be a priest. I'm still a priest, boy. Once you're a priest, you're always a priest. I'm just not an active priest. Okay, what's that mean? Your feeble mind couldn't even begin to comprehend. Go build a shed. My dad was a Byzantine Rite Catholic priest who got permission to leave the priesthood to marry my mother. It wasn't a Thornbirds episode or anything. He was at a church close to where my mom lived, and he met my mother when he went over to bless their house, if you know what I mean. My great-grandparents are from Czechoslovakia, on both sides. That's really all I know. You can't get an answer from my father. When I asked him about my grandparents' move to this country, he started explaining something about how Czechoslovakia isn't really Czechoslovakia and we shouldn't call it that, and then a bunch of meaningless information until I then got yelled at for not understanding what the hell he was trying to say. And it's funny because my dad is so proud of himself for believing he's one of those parents who has kids who can ask him anything. Son, if you ever want to know something, ask me honestly and sincerely, and I will answer you. And when he told me that, I knew that that was the time to find out the truth and stop getting advice from Billy on the schoolyard who had been in the fifth grade 3 times. Dad, how do you have sex? Well, you are not asking honestly and sincerely, and I will not answer you. Go paint the house. The only advice we ever did get from my dad was the same advice we later learned he shared with all my brothers. I was almost at the door about to go to a party. Son, hold on 1 minute. Sure, Dad, what's up? Keep your pecker in your pants. And I was grateful. Not many people have those parents you can just talk to about anything. Well, with my new advice in hand, I then proceeded to my friend's 7th birthday party. The first time I tried to talk to my dad about any type of sexual feelings at all, I was at McDonald's Playland as a little kid in my hometown, and I'm playing on top of this elevated area, and I'm about to go down a slide on the side of this base. As I walk to the slide, ready to go down, this girl I've been noticing walks over toward me. Out of the clear blue, she reaches over and grabs my minuscule package through my shorts and gives it a nice little squeeze. Still in shock, I just turn around and go down the slide. When I got home and I saw my dad was alone, I shared the incident with him. Surely my father could sort out my mixed up, incoherent, newly found sexual feelings. My dad quickly straightened everything out for me. The next time that ever happens, and I can't remember if he used to sigh back then between every third word, but if he did, it would go right about here. You take the person's hand immediately off you and you push that hand away and you yell, "No, I don't like that." And all I was thinking was, my dad's an idiot. Footnote by my first Brooklyn roommate, Alex Jackson. How can I begin to comment on a story as convoluted and twisted as the one you just heard? The thing is, I was there that day, and the truth of the matter is that Keith was 25 years old at the time, playing at McDonald's Playland, grabbing little boys' behinds, saying, "I'm a 12-year-old girl, let me touch your package." I still find it hard to rid my mind of the image of Keith, his finger to his chin, giggling like a girl, saying, "Please, don't make me touch you, I'm a 12-year-old girl. Oops, my pants fell down." I wasn't very smart when I was young, but that didn't stop me from trying to get away with everything when I was a kid. One day, as retaliation for my older brother Mike making me angry, I wrote Mike's name in chalk on every wooden step leading to our basement. Later, I was flabbergasted that Mike never got heat for it, and I was busted right away. Of course, I was punished, but not severely because I was so young. But it didn't take long before Dad soon had a classic list of punishments. Now, my dad insists he never had a hard, long set of rules he asks us to follow, so I wrote a few down that popped into my head. Hands above the table. Elbows off the table. Don't laugh at the table. No laughing in the car. Don't put your feet on the ottoman. Keep the TV volume under 35. After 6 p.m., under 15. Don't sing. Don't whistle. If loud inside, go outside. If loud outside, shut up. If you might make a burping sound, go outside just in case. Don't mock cat in its presence. I like to ask the cat what he did while I was at school. "Oh, did you go bowling today, cat? Did you see a movie?" "Oh, that's right, you can't. You're a cat." No driving until you've completed Dad's personal 48-hour driving course. Do everything Dad says unless it's morally wrong. Dad doesn't say or do anything morally wrong. That's more a statement than a rule. Do as he says, not as he does. Always sit in the front at church or you'll walk home. Don't make noise loading, unloading dishwasher. Leave the toilet seat up. Separate two-ply toilet paper. Don't leave videos in the VCR. Don't watch R-rated movies. Don't watch PG-13 rated movies. Don't watch PG rated movies. Don't act like a homosexual. Don't use the word gay to mean homosexual. Don't walk around as if you don't know what you're doing. No one may watch Rush Limbaugh. Don't ask Dad who he voted for. Don't bite your nails. Don't make it look like you're even remotely biting your nails. Don't call Halloween Yom Kippur in jest. As punishment for laughing in the car or breathing at the table, assuming nothing needed to be built, he would send one of us out with a pick and shovel and, somewhere on our 24-acre property, dig a hole. Nothing ever went in these holes. The holes are never used for anything. But Satan knows exactly how wide this perfectly circular hole must be and exactly to the inch how deep. My youngest brother dug so many holes we could have used our property as a golf course. If you went down an inch too far, no problem. You'll get some more practice with the next hole. My dad's other two punishments are as follows. Number one, building. We built two porches, a chimney, a roof, endless shelves. None of this was something we all just decided to help with because it would be nice or something we were expected to do living in the house. They were all brought upon us as punishments. And you were always in trouble again right before you were finished with some project. One example is the day I'm cleaning all the walls in the entire house. I'm finally at the last wall in the last room with a little section of wall left to clean. All of a sudden, without even saying a word or doing anything wrong, I'm in trouble for acting up, which means I must quit whatever I'm doing, which now means I must not be able to handle the given assignment because there's still a little wall left to clean. So as a new punishment, I'm sent to build or clean something else. And this goes on and on until my dad gets tired from watching me all day. Number two. Encyclopedia Volume S. Most kids got smacked on the ass when they did something wrong before political correctness hit the scene. We think our dad took it a little too far. When we got paddled, it was Encyclopedia Britannica's S volume. It's the thickest. But as my dad got older, he had trouble keeping the heavy book in his hands and whacking us at the same time. Soon he had us with our hands on the seat part of a chair with our ass in the air, and all he could do was throw the book at us. He'd make like he was swinging the book at our ass, but then at the last minute, he would just throw it at our back. And I think that's why my whole family has such bad posture. We had nothing to blame my dad's attitude towards everything on. He didn't do drugs. He never drank. He didn't even smoke. Well, not really. My dad was 20-something years old, and as he was walking home from work, he would pretend he was smoking. My dad would actually pretend to put a cigarette in his mouth, light it, and smoke it. This is the same guy who would yell at mom if we had those candy cigarettes. And here's the kicker. He said by doing that, he was able to get that smoking high. And how did he know when to flick the cigarette away? He would actually feel when the cigarette was expired by the burning sensation on his fingers. Why would you tell your kids that story? One day, he told us, he and a friend were outside his parents' house, and they had just finished smoking an entire carton of cigarettes when he looked up and saw his mother standing over him. I never smoked after that, I can assure you. Now, keep in mind, a carton is 200 cigarettes. His mom just stood there as he smoked 100 cigarettes in one sitting. Another story he told us was the time he got paddled in school. A teacher intercepted a note he wrote that said he fucked this girl in class the night before 67 times. My dad, of course, didn't use the F word when he told the story. My dad only swears under his breath. He'll call us all idiots and morons, but he won't really swear. He will use the word ass, however. Ass, asinine, asininity. He loves that word. One specific day, I brought up the 7-year age difference between my parents when Dad was losing track of reality during one of our infamous arguments. All right, Dad, I gotta go. My date's waiting for me at the elementary school. Don't be asinine. You're a jackass. You talk out of your ass. And I'm acting like I'm offended. Dad, will you quit your cursing? I'm not cursing. It's in the Bible. And the wise man sat atop his ass. Dad, ass, shale the driveway. I said my dad only said the word ass and variations thereof, but to be honest, he did slip a lot of the time. Ass and variations of the word ass that Merriam-Webster didn't even know would fly freely, but all other swear words were covered up. Kind of. My dad breaks something. Shit! Ski bibble.
What?
What? I said shit ski bibble. It's just a made-up word, I said, because I was upset for a second. Just a silly made-up word. What? My dad loses a document on the computer he spent weeks on. Fuck! And seconds later, realizing his kid's eyeballs are about to pop out of their skulls, Arelli. Fuck Arelli. Okay, nice try, Dad. I know I got all my get-rich-quick ideas from my dad. I'll share them with you later on. But first, I want you to understand the genes I had to work with. One day, my dad decides what Somerset needs is one big scavenger hunt. That's what this town needs, to be more like one giant family. My dad convinces some wealthy old man about his ingenious idea of selling books at $5 a piece that sends the buyer out on a scavenger hunt to find Somerset's important landmarks. Right before printing, the old man seems to agree with everyone else in my family that putting up all this money is a bad idea. Then keep your check. If you don't believe in this, I certainly don't want your money, Dad said, all dramatic-like as he does. Then he tore the check in half. And so Dick replied, actually I made his name up, I never really knew it. Mike, you think this is really going to work? Dick, Dad answered, I see no way this cannot work. So Dick writes Dad a new check and hands it over as Dad smiles. Dick, I'm glad you did that. You will wholeheartedly be happy with the results. Dad now has 4,000 scavenger hunt books in his basement. And the $500 savings bond you get as a reward for being the first one who found Somerset's national landmarks, well, Dad didn't make enough to give you a $5 savings bond, so sorry about that. He's always been like this, and it's one thing to be determined and headstrong, even admirable, but for the love of all that is righteous and holy. I know my dad had some regular jobs, kind of. I know after he married my mother, he became a magician. He'd always brag about being invited on Carson and Miss America, but he quit the business because he felt he was so good that he was being perceived as a god. Dad, do you think magicians today are doing something wrong? Not if they just try to entertain. Well, how's that any different from what you did? Your feeble mind couldn't even begin to comprehend! He always reminds us what a success he could have been if it weren't for my mom, who had health problems due to my dad traveling. Mom doesn't remember anything remotely similar to that, so my dad just blames it on her selective memory. We blame it on Dad's creative memory. He then sold Amway for a while, then insurance, then limos and hearses. That was something. It was cool to be driven to junior high school in a limo, but then sometimes you were forced into being driven to junior high in a hearse. I guess it was all give and take. Then he was a truck driver. That lasted about a week. He feels he's too smart for all these jobs. He needs something more creative, he'll always say. And when he quits a job, he feels it's okay because it's not like he's unemployed. He just tells himself he's going back to insurance, which is always convenient because he tells himself insurance isn't a regular 9-to-5 job. So when he's doing nothing, it's okay. That's how the insurance industry works. Like when he quit being a Wendy's assistant manager after a few weeks because it was so god-awful stressful. Well, I've decided to go back to insurance. I need a job that's more creative. I've just realized that now. He also has another reason for quitting in case we just don't buy that one. And I have to be home to keep an eye on you kids. You certainly never learned the meaning of the words integrity and human decency. I have an awesome divine responsibility to be home with you ungrateful kids. I'm here to make your life like you make mine, a living hell. Which is even funnier when we get bitched at for quitting anything for even the best of reasons. Dad, I'm done with summer school. For the love of God, what in the hell do you mean you're done with summer school? Things get tough and you just bail out? Oh, how convenient. No, Dad, I mean summer school is over. There's no more school for anybody. That's it for the summer. Fine, boy. Be a quitter your whole life. See how that affects me. I couldn't give a rat's hoot. Okay, Father Malley. Dad, you don't understand. Oh, no! I understand, all right. It's you who will never understand, but I couldn't give a flickety fluke what you do with your life. Why are you acting like a moron? You talk like a moron. I pray you don't always stay a moron. Well, this is a nice Hallmark moment. Dad, can you quit calling me a moron? I'm not calling you a moron. I'm saying your actions are that of a moronic nature. Dad, shut up, moron! In 1997, Dad was 57 years old. With no knowledge or preparation or eagerness to learn, Dad planned on starting his own film company that would make movies that blended computer animation with real people, similar to what you'd see on PBS. In his lifetime, he still predicted his company would be bigger than the Walt Disney Empire. Dad knows nothing about computers. Nothing at all. So why his movies must blend computers with humans, I can only blame on his insomnia and him seeing some Beyond 2000 television special showing what computers can do. But how will he get the computer animators and video technicians to follow his direction when it's obvious the family is dirt poor? Do you not understand anything? Certainly people will be lining up to share in my project, and they'd be more than happy to do it for, say, a donut and a cup of coffee. Learning nothing from his crates of books he had tiling the downstairs, Dad decided to try to get some funding to design an interactive Catholic CD-ROM. He had no idea what it would be about, and he was seriously offended that his kids didn't either. Well, what about that Sega you kids play? Why can't it be like that? Well, in video games, you can live or die. You have a variety of choices and outcomes. How can you change the Bible? Catholicism is not about just the Bible, son. Well, it doesn't matter. The Bible is what people know. Fine, then. If you're so smart, how do I make it interesting with the Bible? Well, that's my point. People don't want to see the Bible changed. I don't know what to say. What do you know, boy? You don't know much of anything. I can only imagine what he said when he tried to get some money without a plan. All I know is how he justified that this had to work. He took the number of Catholics in the world and multiplied that by 3995. Here's my idea, I pictured Dad beginning his pitch. An interactive CD-ROM dealing with Catholicism. What do you think? Mr. Malley, how exactly do you plan to do this? I mean, how will you make it? How's it going to be distributed? Quite frankly, sir, you're not sharing any information with us. What the hell is this even about? Oh, your feeble minds couldn't even begin to comprehend. We think it was one of these amazing plans that led Dad to going bankrupt many years later, something he always denied until it affected me. I wasn't able to get an apartment one time because his bad credit showed up on my credit. Dad, you have to straighten this out. You told us you never went bankrupt. I never did go bankrupt, boy. Well, this lady says you have the worst credit she's ever seen. It says here you went bankrupt. I know I went bankrupt. I told you kids. You don't listen. That old thing made it extra funny when he found out that I bought the word processor that I started to write this book on. How can you afford this, boy? Well, I used a credit card. Have you no integrity? I pray to the Lord Jesus Christ. You most certainly did not. Well, even if something else comes up, the payments are only $10 a month. I think I'll be all right. Oh, everything is always all right with you, isn't it, boy? Everything's always all right. How did my parents ever get together in the first place? I'll never figure it out. My mom is so much more, what's the word, normal. Recounting these stories, I found myself so lucky that my mom decided it would be best for all concerned if she contributed the majority of genes into the mix. It's so funny when she talks about my dad. She doesn't try to be mean. She just, well... Here's some things she said, and I quote, I was so proud when I married your father. I thought, how lucky I am to marry a man so smart. I was the only one of my sisters to marry a man who went to college. But now I think. When asked if she would marry Dad all over again, well, if I didn't, I wouldn't have you kids. When we'd complain about Dad as usual, well, you just have to remember the source. You can't expect much. Other favorites include, well, at least he doesn't drink or do drugs, and I see now why God makes you say marriage is forever. I'm waiting for the day when Mom says she thought it was always till death do us part. And one day she'll ask Dad a question, he won't hear her. What? And she'll rejoice, it's about time! Dad has reminded me many, many times that he was so close to getting a divorce simply because of me. Well, that's nice. Dad, I was at school today and I learned from the guidance counselor that being married has its own set of problems and it's not my fault you two decided not to be with each other anymore. Boy, I don't know if your guidance counselor is a dumbass, a jackass, or an asinine ass, but I really don't give a flockety flack what he is. What kind of asininity is that? It certainly is all your fault your mother and I aren't together. Don't you dare forget that, ever. One of the few things my parents did agree on was their love for alliteration. My father, Michael George Malley, and my mother, Catherine May Malley, both decided every child they had would have one of their two initials. In order of birth, we are either MGM and KMM, Michael George Malley II, Keith Mark Malley, Christy Marie Malley, Mark Gregory Malley, Kenneth Michael Malley. As you see, they even had to repeat names in order to keep their plan working. I'm happy with the name Keith, though. It's not a weird name like Rain or Bongwater, but it's pretty rare. There's no Keith Morissette or Keith Hanks. That's kind of cool. There's no St. Keith, Keith Willis, Keith Sinatra, Keith Nixon. There's no Keith, Duke of York. Sure, there's Keith Partridge and guitarist Keith Richards, but they're both dead. Mike the Second. Mike, the oldest sibling, is 4 years older than me, and he's incredibly smart. He got like 3,000 on his SATs. Mike and I were taking these military pretests when we grew up, and we debated about joining the military. For some reason, the highest score you can get on the test is 99%. After the test, we were in this Air Force recruiter's office, and the guy starts pretending Mike blew it as he's looking up the score. It was a little funny because we all knew he aced it. Mike scored a 98% and no one was surprised. No sighs of relief, no smiles. It was expected. If anything, we were disappointed that he missed a point. Then it was my turn. And even though I didn't know if I was going to go into the military, I took the test to at least see if I could. And when the same guy pulled the same joke as he looked up my name, there were no smiles. All of a sudden, it wasn't so funny. I scored an 82%, and there was a little party right there. Cheers all around, taps of congratulations on the back, and plenty, plenty of sighs of relief. Mike gets a 98%, nothing. Keith gets an 82%, it's the second coming of Christ. When Mike and I went to bed in the room we shared, our conversations would always end up about Satan. I'd always bring it up, and soon we'd have detailed discussions on what power Satan had, what all can he do, if he could really inhabit human bodies, why doesn't he inhabit every single person's body, and that kind of thing. This would go on until one of our parents heard us and told us to shut up and go to bed. And then, silently, we would each be thinking about Satan, and we were both too scared to fall asleep. Christy. My only sister, Christy, is 3 years younger than me, and with Mike's help, she enforces who the dumb one in the family is. Perfect school grades, a dual major in college, everything. So I can at least take some comfort in knowing that when we were kids, I was able to convince her that I was Spider-Man. I told her I was really Peter Parker and I was living undercover as her brother because the family's having problems. Well, that makes sense, she had to think. I told her to wake me up at midnight and I'd climb the walls for her. I was a sound sleeper though and never heard her trying to wake me up. It wasn't until one day when Mom was in the bathroom supervising my sister in the bathtub that the jig was up. Can you come here for a second? I want to ask you something, Spider-Man. Mom, what are you talking about? Oh, don't worry. Spider-Man can't be afraid of anything. You're not worried about something, are you, Spider-Man? Mark. Mark was born 3 years after Christy, and he's another Einstein. My mom was just churning him out. She looked at me and figured that even Mike and Chris might need some reinforcement. And now, finally, ladies and gentlemen, the explanation of the cutter-uppers. The cutter-uppers were my way of claiming my space. With five children in the house, things got cramped many times, and that's when I brought out the cutter-uppers. The cutter-uppers would sometimes show up when someone was sitting next to me on the couch or a bed, but it usually reared its ugly head when a car was packed with all seven family members. I took my arm, whichever one was closest to the offending area, and I made my hand stiff and started slicing the person's arm or leg that was on my side. I gave them a warning, of course. I'd say something like, uh-oh, it's the cutter-uppers. And I meant it when I said, uh-oh, because even though the cutter-uppers wouldn't hurt me because I've done nothing wrong sitting nicely in my space, you still didn't want to see the cutter-uppers show up. Yes, it was my own hand, but it was still very, very frightening. Along with the verbal warning came the visual warning. The cutter-uppers began away from the offending person's body. By this, they would see that they were too close to you or simply past the middle of the love seat or other seating device designed for two or more people. If, despite these warnings, you stand your ground or simply aren't paying attention, the cutter-uppers, in a karate-type manner, begin chopping away at whatever body part is too close. The cutter-uppers keep going like a machine until you realize it's time to get out of the way. Nothing can stop the indestructible cutter-uppers, but still you can't hate the cutter-uppers because deep down you know they're only doing their job. The thing was, the cutter-uppers absolutely loved their job, and as they cut you up, the cutter-uppers would sing. The cutter-uppers, the cutter-uppers. The cutter-uppers spawned other devilish inventions. Mark, who, like all members of the family, became a victim many times of the cutter-uppers, came up with the windshield wipers. They sang too, of course, which was the most painful part of all. The windshield wipers! The windshield wipers! Now, unlike the cutter-uppers, the windshield wipers would strike you whether you'd done anything wrong or not. You'd hold out your arm and raise your forearm at a 90-degree angle. As you're singing the windshield wiper's theme, you'd start moving your arm back and forth like a windshield wiper, and then you begin smacking people. The windshield wipers are pure evil. Even worse, the beater bar. As a child, Mark heard that the bar in the vacuum cleaner was called the beater bar. And I think you know where this is going. The beater bar! The beater bar! If you had a stick, a paper towel, cardboard thing, or even a large oatmeal drum box, you had a beater bar. You then, of course, walked around singing the song as you beat people. In fact, if you see the Rodney King tape ever again, listen closely and you'll hear a cop go, "Uh-oh, it's the beater bar." Ken. Only a year after Mark's birth, there was Ken. However, by this time, all the IQ had been used up. And I don't mean it in a mean way, it's just a fact is a fact. Ken will put paper clips in electrical sockets just to see what would happen. And that's not a made-up example of something silly he'd do. That's actually a true story. And he was in high school at the time. Ken's also a little scary. In fact, he once told me he wishes he was a superhero so he could kill everybody. One Christmas night, we were all at my parents' house, and Mike, Mark, and Ken were all sleeping in the same room. And the two older brothers listened to Ken talking in his sleep, as he so often does. And Ken asks, "Is it sharp?" And then, in a menacing voice, he quickly answers himself, "Sharp enough to kill." Ken always enjoyed Crystal Light, the Kool-Aid-type powder my mother always drank. It comes in a small round container, and Ken used to always sneak a packet of powder outside with him and eat it. Right from the container. He loved that sweet powder. One day, Mark and I are outside on our back porch, and from being high enough, we're able to see Ken hiding from everyone in part of our 24 acres we owned and rented out to the neighboring farmer. It looks to us like Ken's crouched down and sucking down another Crystal Light, despite all the times he's told that those are Mom's. "Ken," I yell, "is that another Crystal Light?" "No," he yells back as he immediately shows his guilt by standing upright with his hands by his side. "No, I am not." Then, right away, to hide the evidence, he takes the Crystal Light packet, still full, and throws it like a football in the air. All you see where Ken is standing is an insanely huge cloud of purple powder slowly fall to the ground. And then Ken continues denying any wrongdoing. One time when our lawnmower broke down, Dad decided that we didn't need another one because short lawns are just overrated. Soon the grass in the yard we played in was just as high as the crops the farmer was growing, and Ken was hiding and eating all the Crystal Light he could digest as soon as he stepped off our porch. No one could see him. To put a stop to this, my dad decided to get rid of the tall grass by burning it. He'll just take a match, burn some grass to a decent length, and then stomp it out. He goes inside and comes out with a matchbook, muttering under his breath how the family is so eager to spend money like it grows on trees. First of all, we should appreciate all the grass we have. Back in his day, they didn't even have grass. He starts lighting the yard, but it's not catching. He decides to get some gasoline to get that baby cooking. Picture a grown man, a father of five, dumping gasoline all over his lawn. Within seconds, he's jumping up and down on the lawn trying to put out a blaze. He runs into the house to get buckets of water after he yells at us for not having water ready. The fire gets higher and seeps into the crops, and soon acres are on fire, about to burn down a small neighboring forest. By this time, I'm on the phone with the fire department, wondering what all the neighbors must be thinking looking out their windows, watching 24 acres worth of thick black smoke fill the air and blanket the entire town. Living in the country, we got a lot of stray animals. We had one cool dog once, but mostly we got pregnant cats. My dog would feed them our lunch meat and hot dogs when my mom wasn't around. When my mom was home for a while, the cat had to look elsewhere for food. Living in the country, you see a lot of wild animal behavior. Nothing, though, etches in your mind like seeing your cat eat all its kittens. How can't one cat escape? There were at least 9 kittens there the last time I found out it happened, and not one got away. After mommy starts eating Stripey and Tiny, can't you figure out what she's doing? Mommy got hold of some sour milk, run! But no, they never catch on. Buttons, come over here. Mommy wants to tell you something. What's going on? Mom, why are you... Anyone see what's going on here? Anyone want to explain to me how things are going to continue today? No one? All right, but pay attention. Can you come here a second, Pokey? You ever see a cat eat its kittens? Not even entertaining. More gross than anything. Not many animals' eating habits are fun to watch, though. Like a snake, for example. Their whole job is to look cool. They don't have to do anything but eat live mice when we feed them to it, and that takes them an hour anyway. It's not fun to watch at all. Your whole job is to look cool in my house. You don't look very cool taking an hour to eat a damn mouse. I don't have any teeth. Well, you could have mentioned that sooner. You're fired. What else are you going to get in a snake's place? A ferret? How dumb. I know people that have ferrets. All they do is run around under everything in your house and take little dumps like they're setting up an Easter egg hunt. Then people buy them in pairs like they're being so innovative. Meet my ferrets, Pogo and Bogo. Oh, have you met Bouncy and Wouncy? Oh, it rhymes, yes, but the names really do fit them. My mom made us get rid of the cats after it was obvious that they would never leave. So my dad, who doesn't exactly work for the ASPCA, put the cats in a box, drove off far away, and dropped them in the middle of nowhere so they couldn't find their way back. My dad is the reason I think I have the answer to everything. There is nothing the man didn't know, no problem he couldn't solve. Yet, although my dad knew everything about life, I didn't learn this until I was older. When I was born, I assumed I had idiots for parents. You see, when I was a newborn growing up, and my parents talked to me with sentences like gaga and goo goo, I would just look at them thinking, oh my God, my parents are retards. And then I was excited. Oh, this is so going to come in handy when I'm 14. Then I'd get into some big trouble and my mom would go, where have you been? We've been worried sick. Where's Mr. Party All the Time been? So help me. And that's when I tried to calm everyone down. Goo goo gaga? With my dad being the way he was, my mom being overly concerned like moms are, my mom often wonders if I was raised properly, which right there in itself is a sign of being a good mother. We're only a few pages into this book, and we can all already admit that I've turned out pretty well. Of course, she doesn't like me using bad language, but she slowly got used to me writing dirty words in stories and understood it had nothing to do with how she raised me. She slowly understood that me trying drugs, more on this later, had nothing to do with how I was brought up. I talked to her not that long ago, no matter when you're hearing this, even if she's in heaven now, and she said she wishes she had us, her children, take turns cooking meals, that way we'd know how to cook and, like me in particular, not be forced to eat out or stop at delis for every meal. And that's when I told her, hey, thanks for teaching me how to cook all my meals. Now I'm a great cook and thank you for that. Oh, look, I'm 300 pounds now. Thank you. I'm a fat slob. Eternal thanks. Yes, my mom sometimes wonders if it's how I was raised, when something seems wrong with the way I do something. Then I remind her how silly she's being. Although that thing where she'd pinch me and twist the skin, there was never no reason for that. And that thing where she acted like she was going to drive away and leave us at the department store because we got in the car too late. Are you a barbarian? It was reasons like these that I knew that I was the one that had to be the voice of reason in the house when it came to teaching my younger siblings. How life worked, how to act, everything. When I was a kid and I played cards with my younger sister or brothers, I made up the card games. They had sports themes usually, like football and baseball and hockey, but there was never any way to beat me. Okay, this card represents your hockey player, okay? You want to have a strong player, of course, so let's flip this over. An ace, wow! Is that good? It's an ace. It's the best. It looks like you'll finally beat me at one of these games. Oh, cool. Now, this represents your hockey stick. Let's flip this one over. All the cards look like the actual game. If we were playing boxing, for example, there might be one card representing the body and two representing the fist, with the fist on the appropriate place on the card, like it's a real body, sideways, about one third down from the top of the card. Another ace. Ooh, what do you mean? Well, two aces could be very good or very bad, and this now depends on your puck speed. Flip over your puck and see how you hit it. A king! I hit it very hard, right? Wow, excellent. You're getting some great cards. Now, the one thing you don't want is for my goalie to stop you. Now, I'll flip him over and we'll see if you can get past him. What you don't want is a flip. A five. No, no. Your cards were high and great, and low cards would be good too. But when you're so good, you have to be careful of a middle of the road player like a five. Oh, no. Yes. Oh, man. The one card you didn't want. Oh, tough break. So I lost? Yes, again. When my mom was about to enter the room, the games always ended short. Like all of a sudden, I wanted to play blackjack. When mom left the room, it was back to hockey and world domination. When I was a kid, I led the club, an exclusive club that my younger siblings could be part of. Their enrollment was all dependent upon their behavior. Did they piss me off? You're out. I then reminded them how good the club is to its members. Oh, it's good. What do I get? I never get nothing. You were so close to getting everything, but now you had to take the front seat in the car, and you know I'm in the front seat when mom's driving. Okay, I'll be good. Make me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I'll then decide. Okay, you're in. Yay, what do I get? Well, you got to be in for a while. Once I got a handheld broken radio in a free box at a garage sale. It had a volume dial that stuck out of it that went from 1 to 10. I would gauge my younger brother's attitudes on the 1 to 10 scale, which was on a shelf higher than they could reach. They were a team, and whatever number it was at, be it 10, in, or 1, out, that was where they were in my graces. Do you have an 8? Just suit my needs a little longer. A 3? Well, you best prepare a human offering. One time, my brother Mark, who's now taller than my 6'2 height, found a way to reach the radio and, finally wise enough to realize how ridiculous the club was, changed his level of 1 to 10. I came home, saw it right away, and was livid. Oh my God, he was so out.
KeithAndTheGirl.com/dadbook.